Thank you. I have nothing to disclose other than what I will disclose in the course of this talk, which will become relevant, as you will see. And I'm not discussing any off-label uses. I'll just do a brief introduction of myself. My name is Martin Donahoe. I'm a physician. I teach occasional courses in public health and social justice and medical humanities, and work with a lot of activist groups as an unpaid scientist and general curmudgeon. And all of my presentations, including this one, as well as about 140, 150 others by me and many, many by other individuals, are on the Public Health and Social Justice website, which is publichealthandsocialjustice.org, or to get there quickly is phsj.org, and all of the references relevant to the statements that I'll make in this talk can be found in an accompanying paper that you will find also on the website. So I will first define for you corporate front groups. I'll then talk about my experience with one of the largest in the United States, the American Council on Science and Health, then get to the more broad topic of corporate PR tactics in general, and draw a few conclusions and make some suggestions for further action. Corporate front groups are groups that promote corporate agendas. They tend to have strong financial and advisory links with corporations. They will disseminate misinformation and even outright lies under the guise of science. Usually this is non-peer-reviewed material, which is cherry-picked or drawn out of context. And in general, they promote a pro-business and conservative ideology. How I got involved with the American Council on Science and Health is the only one of the few paid writing gigs I've ever had in my life was to write a minimally reimbursed column on social justice issues and public health for Medscape for a couple of years. And I wrote an essay on global warming in which I called the American Council on Science and Health a corporate front group, which I had previously done in an article that I'd written for Social Science and Medicine, but no corporate flunkies tend to read that, so that had been ignored. One of the reasons that I did this was because they had selected Michael Crichton, the author, as the recipient of their 2005 Sound Science Medal, and his book State of Fear had just come out, in which he questions the existence of human-caused global warming. The leader of ACSH has also referred to the belief that burning fossil fuels has caused global warming as pseudoscience, and criticized environmental scientists and climate scientists as doomsayers and fearmongers. Well, they threatened to sue not only Medscape, but me. Medscape pulled the article offline and then republished it, to their credit, another 4 or 5 days later, and allowed me to expand upon why I felt ACSH was a corporate front group. The problem is that it didn't make the daily feed, so there was a potential loss in readership compared to my other pieces, which were included in the Medscape daily feed. So in some sense, ACSH accomplished what it set out to. Well, who are the players, first of all, here? The co-founder of ACSH is Dr. Elizabeth Whelan, whose early writing career included some freelance work for Pfizer, in which she criticized the FDA, some articles for Harper's Bazaar and Glamour, which she referred to as consumer magazines, and I would more rightly refer to as fashion magazines, and a couple of books, Panic in the Pantry and Toxic Terror. The physician who is currently their medical and executive director and who is in charge of all scientific projects at the organization is Dr. Gilbert Ross, who 1 year before being hired spent some time in a federal prison after being sentenced to 46 months for Medicaid fraud, perjury, and obstruction of justice, and was barred by the Department of Health and Human Services for 10 years from participating in either Medicare or Medicaid. This is not mentioned on his bio on the ACSH website. In his early career, he defended the Wood Preservative Science Council against health claims regarding arsenic and pressure-treated wood, and wrote on behalf of the farmed salmon industry that PCBs in fish do not cause any health problems. In terms of the finances, there's a little bit of murkiness surrounding ACSH because they previously released data on their funding sources. They stopped doing this in the early 1990s. There have been a few Freedom of Information Act requests and other things that have gotten a little bit of information through aggressive journalists. But they have an annual turnover about $2 million, initial funding came from the Olin and Scape Foundations and other right-wing groups, as well as from corporations. And they have accepted money in the past to write and disseminate pro-industry studies. Now it's estimated that about a third of their funds come from private foundations, a third from individuals, and a third from corporations. This information comes from their website and their leader. Well, I have to include one slide talking about the sound science that indeed the American Council on Science and Health has promulgated. They have spoken out regarding the dangers of tobacco smoking. They do support the Institute of Medicine recommendation regarding coverage of contraception as a preventive health service. And they have criticized Oprah for her pseudoscientific claims, such as those which she has advanced by her support of the author of The Secret, the anti-vaccination promulgations of Jenny McCarthy and others, as well as a number of nutritional supplement promotions. Now I have many slides looking at their pseudoscientific and misinformation claims. They've attacked the precautionary principle, one of the fundamental principles of public health, as anti-science and anti-technology phobia, as fundamentally reactionary and elitist, and more on the order of theology than science. They have minimized the effects of environmental tobacco smoke on human health, despite the fact that it causes upwards of 40,000 plus deaths per year in the United States alone, and they have opposed FDA regulation of e-cigarettes. They have promoted smokeless tobacco, snus, and e-cigarettes as smoking cessation aids and opposed graphic tobacco package warnings. They have denied many of the adverse neurological effects of lead exposure, the endocrine disrupting effects of PCBs, and claimed that the court-ordered cleanup of the Hudson River by GE was based on false claims of PCBs causing cancer. If you're interested in social medicine, earlier this year, Claire Robinson from GM Watch, that's Genetically Modified Crop Watch, and I had a piece in social medicine on GE, which is often called America's most admired corporation and yet has one of the most abysmal public health, worker safety, and environmental and human rights records in the history of corporate America. ACSH has also minimized the health concerns of 911 responders. They've opposed EPA attempts to strengthen clean air standards. They've opposed TSCA reforms, the Toxic Substances Control Act reforms, and denied the health risks of certain cosmetics that have been brought to light by the Environmental Working Group and others. They have claimed uncertainty regarding the effects of agricultural antibiotics, denied the health and environmental risks of genetically modified crops, and turned the ALAR controversy into a manufactured cautionary tale of overzealous regulators run amok. They have criticized health concerns regarding trans fatty acids, including saying things such as, there is no such thing as a junk food, and there is insufficient evidence of a relationship between diet and any disease. They have rejected the American Association of Pediatrics recommendation for fast food television advertising ban. Kids see about 40,000 ads per year, many of these from junk food and fast food companies. And they have opposed the ban on sales of energy drinks to minors. They have claimed that irradiated food is safe, wholesome, and nutritious, and that no radioactive isotopes are involved, both of which are blatantly false statements, and they have promoted nuclear power as well as the benefits of what's called radiation hormesis, which is the so-called beneficial effects on the immune system of low-dose exposure to radiation. They have denied the link between dioxins and pesticides and adverse health effects, including through statements such as pesticides are not toxic to humans of any age. They've supported the use of human volunteers in pesticide toxicity studies, and they've denied the health consequences of fire retardants and overheated Teflon. These are among the things that they have referred to as phony health scares: mercury in tuna and other fish, saying, enjoy it without worry; diesel exhaust fumes from school buses; arsenic in drinking water; and phthalates in medical devices and children's toys. Well, it should be obvious that the threat of litigation against Medscape is antithetical to the rules of science, which requires the free exchange of information and opinion in pursuit of the truth. ACHA, ACHA, This group's common modus operandi is to conduct ad hominem attacks, for instance, often referring to environmentalists as toxic terrorists. In fact, their leader has criticized APHA past president Barry Levy and citizen activist Aaron Brockovich as, quote, individuals who pursued self-serving financial opportunities through litigation. And they have called the Harvard School of Public Health a, quote, hotbed of pseudoscience and political agitation. Go Harvard. Now, you might be willing to sort of write these guys off as kooks and nobody listens to them, but the sad fact is that they have a huge media presence, and often Whelan and Ross and others write editorials that are in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post. They're frequently seen on everything from the Today Show to CNN to Fox News to Good Morning America. And their website is quite popular. At least in 2003, the last time they released data, they were getting upwards of 100,000 hits per month. And they are often called on to provide the, quote, fair and balanced viewpoint when public health issues are involved. Now, there are profound implications of their attacks on science and scientists. The first being that in misleading the public, they may cause people to alter their lifestyle and/or purchasing habits, which then could have adverse consequences to their health. There are threats of litigation and slap suits. This is strategic lawsuits against private parties or tend to distract, intimidate, and deplete the financial, legal, and scientific resources of both individuals and groups who are committed to public health. And in fact, this is the reason that they bring these suits. Their faulty pronouncements can influence our elected officials, and their threats of litigation diverts the valuable time of healthcare providers, editors, and legal departments away from their more productive missions of research, teaching, writing, and patient care. A sad consequence of their activities is that scientists and healthcare advocates may indeed decide that it is wiser to avoid conflict than to publish content to which ACSH and other such groups might object. I want to now put this into the broader context of some of the other PR activities that corporations carry out that are designed to mislead, obfuscate science, promulgate misinformation. Now, inadequate funding of science and health education in our public schools today means that individuals may lack the background necessary to recognize sound science versus ideological bulk. And as you're well aware, our schools are among the worst performing among developed nations. A quarter of American schools have no libraries. Half of our population believes that humans and dinosaurs coexisted and does not believe in evolution. 20 to 25% of our population thinks that a nuclear weapon has never been dropped on another country by the United States. 20% of our country does not believe that the Earth revolves around the sun. 11% of high school students in this country cannot identify the United States on a map, and 30% cannot identify the Pacific Ocean on a map. So there is a tremendous amount of geographic, political, and scientific ignorance present. And of course, the media capitalizes on this, and media consolidation over the last 20 to 30 years has meant that fewer and fewer corporations are tasked with providing us the information that we receive regarding science. And there were 50 different corporations that controlled major media outlets in 1980, and now that is down to 5. So some of the things that corporations will do include greenwash, which are public relations and ad campaigns that are designed to make them look eco-friendly. One of the famous examples of this was the BP transition to the Beyond Petroleum logo that they had. And they spent as much money on research into alternative fuels the year that that campaign first came out as they actually spent on the campaign itself to portray themselves as eco-friendly. Front groups will often also do what's called astroturfing, which is the creation of artificial grassroots coalitions, which might be one individual with a blast fax machine in an apartment building in Kansas who's trying to create the perception of a groundswell of public support either for or against a certain bill. As further PR tactics, sorry, I refuse to drink the bottled water here out of principle, so I'm sorry you have to deal with my gravelly voice. They will invoke poor people as beneficiaries. They'll characterize their opposition as technophobic, anti-science, anti-business, against progress. And we already talked about their portrayal of products. So because of these problems in public education, they will often step in and provide to cash-strapped public schools free of charge through their generosity, sponsored environmental education materials or curricula. And these are corporate sponsored. They're supported by a loose coalition of anti-regulatory zealots, corporate polluters, lapdog scientists, and misguided parents. And schools will accept them because they often either don't have syllabi or curricula for, say, environmental science, but they don't have individuals who are qualified to teach those courses. So I want to just give you a few examples. One of them is Exxon's Energy Cube for the junior high school kids, which has statements in the materials including these: gasoline is simply solar power hidden in decayed matter, which is true, just as is the statement offshore drilling creates reefs for fish, but it somewhat diverts you away from the fact that the use of gasoline and our addiction to fossil fuels is the prime contributor to global warming. The Pacific Lumber Company has a forestry education package, which includes statements like the Great American Forest is renewable forever. And then some of my other favorites, and I'm not sure if I have a slide on this or not. Oh, yeah, the American Nuclear Society's nuclear energy packet for physics teachers is called Activities with the Atoms Family. And Dow has Chemapalooza after the Lollapalooza rock tour, which is designed to promote the benefits of industrial chemicals. I think since I do have, it looks like just another couple of minutes, I'd like to also say something about this approach of being so-called fair and balanced to public health issues when they're discussed in the news media. And some of you may be aware of the article in Science Magazine in 2004 where they looked at about 1,000 articles that were published in the preceding 10 years in peer-reviewed scientific journals and found that of those approximately 1,000 articles, not one was in doubt as to the existence or the cause of global warming. And then as a comparison, they looked to the place where many people get their information. Well, not so much now, but 10 years ago, and that would be newspapers. And they looked at the four major papers in this country, LA Times, New York Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal, and about 600 to 700 articles, or all the articles that dealt with global warming during that same 10-year period. And fully half of them expressed doubt as to the existence and or the cause of global warming. And so what you can see is when you have a few of these lapdog scientists that will be mouthpieces for corporate polluters, for the tobacco industry, for the junk food industry, and they're given a voice by lazy journalists who are willing to present an issue as being controversial, you can imagine how the average person might just sort of throw up their hands and say, well, I don't know what to believe. They haven't figured this out. Maybe we do need to study global warming for another 10, 20, 30 years and then figure out what to do about it. So what are the conclusions or really suggestions that I come out of this with? One is that professional and lay publications should expose the workings of groups like ACSH, and they're one of the largest, but there are many others. That scientists should vigorously fight back against harassment, and that we need to improve the quality of public education, get corporations out of our classrooms. So this presentation is on the website. That's it up there again, publichealthandsocialjustice.org or phsj.org. I'm hoping that my co-conspirators up here will be willing to allow me to post theirs. I know that at least some of them have websites of their own. For instance, I'll mention Nick's when I introduce him. And do you have one, Bill? What is your website?
It's related to the book.
Okay, so corporations, the bottom line are public health for bills. And Justin, if you have one, please mention it when you start, and I'll mention Nick since I know his in the introduction. And I have time, I think, for one question, and that's it. So, and then hopefully we'll have some time at the end. Yes, the representative from ACSH in the back. No, I'm just kidding. Well, one is by shedding sunlight on these. And you won't see the paper on ACSH that I wrote, I submitted to 11 mainstream journals, including American Journal of Public Health, and got rejected by all of them. The paper I did on General Electric, I wrote in response to a piece in New England Journal that was looking at a merger between, or a technology transfer agreement between GE Medical Systems and Columbia New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is one of the largest academic medical conglomerates in the U.S. They just talked about the financial matters of the arrangement in the New England Journal. So I submitted a letter saying, isn't it somewhat ironic that GE created the largest Superfund site in the U.S., that is the Hudson River, where PCBs were flowing down, causing developmental disabilities and cancers that would be diagnosed with GE scanners, their histories recorded on GE medical records, they'd be treated with GE radiation therapy equipment, and isn't this a sort of macabre twist on the concept of cradle-to-grave care? They didn't publish the letter. I submitted that piece to 15 different journals, and it finally got published in something only my mom reads. So I think we need to pressure our medical editors and our educators to get the word out, writing op-eds to the newspaper, becoming active in movements like what's going on Wall Street now. There are groups like Corporate Accountability International that are quite involved in this issue, and so shedding light on the issue. And it has to be very brief because I don't want to take out of it.
In 3 minutes, in response to this, there's an organization that I helped found called the Public Trust that is modeled on ASH. And we aim to collect scientists, train them in media, and do all the things you mentioned, plus other things, to directly respond to all issues.
Great. Well, send me the link, please, and I'll put it up on the website if it's not already there. Our next speaker, I'm very happy to introduce.